Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Yes, that line forms
on the right, babe.
Not that Maggie.
Chris McMonagle here with you on The Fan. I got you for 3 hours till 5 o'clock and the warm-up show. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. We got Fleegs on the other side. And we continue the baseball season. The Mets get a win. Hey, they took care of the Marlins. A little bit of a lineup tweak, and there's Bader. We'll get to Bader in a second. And the New York Yankees continue to pound the solid Kansas City Royals. And that's, listen, you want to watch this team, and we talk about it, and it's just like, well, Chris, why do you keep saying these things about the Yankees? Well, because they're unstoppable. All right? Let's be honest. Watching this team, the starting pitching, which I've gone on and on about, even Cody Petit can come up and pitch well enough to win. Now, it helps when you score 6 runs in the first inning, and that's really what I take away from these 3 games. All right, we can go on and on about the different things about the Yankees, and we will. We'll go into the trade deadline and what they need, and I might even throw a wacky trade option at you before the show ends today. But clearly they need help at certain places. They're not the perfect team, but what stands out to me about this Yankee team right now, right? We talked about the urgency. We talked about the difference in the lineup, and they never play the subs, and it's... They started it at the beginning of this year. They went in with a different mentality. Aaron Judge talked about how he wanted to see the change and how they treat the beginning part of the season. As now we are in damn near halfway through the year, 70 games into the season, and they have the best record in the American League and are on pace to rival the 1998 Yankees. And no one's going to put them there yet, but that's what they are doing at the moment. What strikes me about this series and what people don't seem to want to admit, and that's what bothers me, because there's this belief out there because of the Dodger series without Juan Soto, because of the losing 3 out of 4 against the Orioles, who will be in the Bronx in just a few days, and they'll get another look at this Oriole team that's taking care of the lousy Atlanta Braves who can't score any runs. But as we look at this, the narrative of they can't beat good teams, or there are no good teams in the American League, like they're doing this. They're beating everyone. They're beating everyone. And yet it's sort of looked at as, well, we'll see what happens in the playoffs. Like everybody all of a sudden is Randy Quaid from Major League. Like it just drives me crazy, because what this team just did, like let's be honest, you come off the Dodgers series, you head into Kansas City, and Kansas City is one of the surprise teams of the season. Heading into this series, Kansas City had 12 games over 500, secure in a wild card position, and having some of the best pitching in the American League, including the two first pitchers the Yankees have seen in this series. They don't start Judge. They don't start Giancarlo Stanton in the first game, and they small ball you to death, and they bunt, and they come through with base hits, and they pitch. And now these last 2 games, they have absolutely dominated this Royals team. They've outscored the Royals 25-7 in this series, and the gauntlet that is the beginning part of this lineup. And here's for all of you people, I wanted to throw this out too. For all of you people who think either Judge or Soto should hit fourth, I know this is an old conversation, but it makes me laugh. Because as I watch the first inning, You need your power hitter at fourth. The best hitter on the team needs to hit third. Soto should be hitting third and Judge fourth. Why do we hit guys two? Because at the top of the lineup, you want these guys to make sure they hit in the first inning. And the Yankees lead Major League Baseball in runs scored in the first inning. And you know what runs in the first inning do? Especially against the Kansas City team that's an upstart team with a lot of youth and really coming off a miserable season last year, trying to establish themselves as the solid team that they've been all year long. It demoralizes them. When you come in and you face Volpe, who's a story unto himself and how he's performed, but then you've got to face Soto and Judge and the imposing Giancarlo Stanton that we're going to get into here in a minute. And you have to face that gauntlet. And then you see the rest of this roster that sure needs some help, and they're going to have to figure out a corner infield position probably at the deadline, and you want more swing and miss in the bullpen. But as you look at the depth of this roster and you see Trevino hit a three-run home run, you see what Verdugo has meant to this team. Even Gleyber Torres, who is going to get hot, I have no doubt, who hits a big-time home run in this game. It is a daunting lineup. Sure, it is not an all-star at every position, but it is a top-to-bottom, as solid as an offense as there is in Major League Baseball, and particularly getting through the top of the order right now is damn near impossible. And watching what they've done over the course of this season, and certainly off the course of this series, as they stepped in to what was going to be, all right, it's not the Dodgers, all right, it's not the Orioles, but look around the rest of the American League. And you can say the American League sucks, and you can say, oh, I don't trust the Central, and God knows, the Yankees have won every single game against, it's obnoxious. I think they're 16 or 17 and 1 against the American League Central. They've lost one game against the Central. But as you watch them just pound the Kansas City Royals, who are one of the best teams in the American League, and as you watch this starting pitching of the Kansas City Royals, this pitching of the Royals that has been part of the reason, along with Bobby Witt Jr. and the rest of this lineup, and some of the names in it, and you know, we all know Perez is one of the better hitting catchers of this generation, really, and a clutch player, obviously World Series MVP. As you watch the Yankees absolutely pound them, and their starting pitching not be able to make it through the lineup, there is nothing else to say about this Yankee team than other than it needs some fine tweaks. We can have fun about the pie in the sky things that they'll try and get and what they could need. But ultimately, right now, as long as they stay healthy, I don't think, you know, we talk about what Brian Cashman needs, and I watch Ken Rosenthal, and, you know, all of a sudden as we get about halfway through the season, the trade deadline has really become a topic here, and bolstering the team and trying to figure out, now that you have a good grip on who they are, well, who are they? They're a dominant force inside the American League. Is it a guarantee they win? Of course not. There's no such thing. But they are a dominant force, and this lineup and this rotation, and particularly this was a test for me. Like, I know a lot of Yankee fans don't want to consider it a test. It's the Kansas City Royals. Coming off a three-game series against the Dodgers where they lost two out of three. And they're just getting Soto back, and you weren't sure how, you know, he was going to respond to the arm injury. And you were facing an upstart team on the road in Kansas City during a stretch where they're going to play all these games in a row, and it starts with a day off for Judge and a day off for Stanton. And just to watch them come in and pound the Royals tells you what you need to know. Which is, despite maybe a down American League, and despite as we look across to the West where we figured we would see some of the other better teams in the American League, and we look at it and we see Seattle in first place, who really doesn't hit at all and just is relying on their pitching. We look at a Texas Ranger team that just got Seager back and is trying to find their footing, but under 500. We look at an Astros team that's devastated by injury and lost again last night and is struggling mightily and is six games under 500 right now. You look around the American League, sure, they need to fix first base. Sure, Rizzo's a problem. Sure, you'd like to add some more swing and miss in the bullpen. Sure, you can always improve, and it'll be up to Cashman to, as to quote Keith, stack the deck. And you want to make sure this is the team that does get you over the top. But right now, while there are flaws, they just went into Kansas City and made a statement. All right, this is we talk about statements that are made across the year. Sure, you want to say the Dodger series was a statement without Juan Soto? Be my guest. You want to say losing 3 out of 4 and that to Baltimore and that Baltimore made a statement early on in the year? Absolutely, they did. But the New York Yankees have made statements throughout this year. They made statements to start the season against the Astros, and they've made a statement here following a series loss, the first one in forever, and getting right back on the horse and getting right back to their winning ways and dominating a playoff team. Whatever you think of them, whether you've paid attention to baseball this year and just assumed the Royals are crap and they lost 100-plus games last year, whatever is in your head about the New York Yankees and about the rest of this American League, the Royals are right there as one of the more impressive starts to the season, one of the better pitching staffs, and overall one of the better teams in the American League. And the Yankees went into Kansas City and reminded them that by the fifth inning, we're going to have our broadcasters talking about barbecue because this game's over. And that's what they continue to do throughout the American League and particularly through the Central. So I don't want to hear, oh, Kansas City's not a good team. Oh, they can't hang with the elites. Who are the elites? The teams you deem elite because they beat the Yankees in a series? Nonsense. Nonsense. And then we get to the Mets, who had a good win, scored 10 runs. And I'll tell you a couple of things. And one, I like Mendoza as a manager. And it seems like what I like about him, and this can sometimes be overrated, but what I like about him is when he makes a move, it tends to have an impact. Now, it won't be a long-lasting impact. It doesn't necessarily have to. But like, it just felt like he moves Lindor to the top of the order. It helps a little bit. Right? He makes a little tweak, and we're not sure if he's going to keep this tweak or not. But, you know, he wants Alonso cleanup. Didn't get much there. But you move Bader to the two spot. And I'll tell you, for the Mets, how good has Harrison Bader been? Like, I understand what he is and what he isn't. And he hasn't hit left-handed pitching as much as you would like. And he's even had defensively, you know, as smooth as he is and as much as he makes 90% of the plays, there's been a couple of plays where it's almost like, all right, he's a great defender, but you'd expect him to make that play. But ultimately, he's been as clutch as a hitter for this New York Met team as there's been on the team. And that was a big home run. Whatever we think of this season, and we might not think much, they've got to start winning now, and you can't lose to Miami. And off that loss to Miami with the offense continuing to do nothing, to go in there and get the Mets right in the ballgame with a two-run home run, that is a big at-bat. That is a clutch hit. And I'll give it to Mendoza because I've credited him and Stearns with setting a standard and setting some sort of level of play that you need to meet if you want to play. They've held players accountable. And the other thing he's done is with the little moves he's made, they tend to work. Now, it hasn't worked long term as they still struggle and they still have had a miserable season here. But as you start to look at the future, because I think that's what this team eventually in the next few weeks is going to be about. As you hit the trade deadline, as you look forward, building this team, do you have the pieces in place? I like the manager. I do. And I think he's made a smart move here with Diaz, too, who clearly, once he comes back, is going to be the closer again. And I understand that's going to be the talking point coming from all this. As Diaz is coming back tomorrow, he's going to be the closer again. And unfortunately, the Mets were forced to send down Danny Young back to AAA. And for those of you who I've seen, I was talking about this with Fliegelman too, as we were looking and as that impending decision was coming, and was it going to be Nunez, but he's pitched so well, him and Young have been kind of the two better bullpen arms for this team, and whether or not they would, you know, cut bait with Ottavino. Are you out of your mind? Do you honestly think the Mets are going to cut bait with a reliever with the track record of Ottavino, who honestly was one of your better relievers for the first half of this season? He struggled, no doubt. But you are not going to cut Ottavino. You are not going to release and DFA and lose that pitcher on your staff. Young, I know you want to see the kids, the younger guys. I know Young has pitched well, and obviously Daniel Nunez has pitched really well. He'll still be with the team. But you're going to have an opportunity to see these guys back, you know, up and down at different times. And certainly, once this season opens up, like we all think it will at the trade deadline, you're going to get more opportunity to see these guys. But right now, as you're still kind of chasing it, as you're only a couple of games out, as the offense awakens and gets 10 runs in this game, as you're hoping to get on a stretch here against the lousy Miami Marlins, as you're waiting for Pete Alonso to erupt, as Lindor is starting to wake up, as you're still chasing this thing 70 or so games into the season, you are not cutting bait with a reliever like Ottavino. But this Met team, it's going to come down to how they play in the next few weeks. And ultimately, I don't know if there's anything they can do that would change what I think this organization wants to do, which is to trade everything that's not nailed down and figure out how about going to build this team in the image of its new leader, David Stearns. But ultimately, I like the manager. And as you start to look ahead and see what kind of organization you're building here, he has set a tone with a standard of play for Jeff McNeil, who was back in the lineup. But Jeff McNeil doesn't hit. Jeff McNeil doesn't play. Hauser doesn't pitch. He's in the bullpen. Like, they have set a standard of play. Plus, he has a good feel for the team. Whenever you make tweaks and they help, whenever you put Bader in the two slot and he hits a home run, whenever you make little moves like that and they pay dividends right away, it makes me feel like the guy has an idea of and a finger on the pulse of this team. And as much as they've struggled long-term and as much as he got off to a rough start at the beginning of the year, I feel like he's handled everything around the Mets as good as you possibly can. All the noise that's been built, all the, you know, again, he gives a day off to Nimmo, who's been struggling. Like, everything around this team. The Lopez situation, I thought he handled relatively well, although I didn't think it was as big a deal as he did. He did, and he handled it the way you should if you feel a player is disrespecting the game, and then obviously you when he disregards what you have to say in the postgame. So, I mean, I feel like he's handled every situation as well as you could possibly handle it. And that's really what this team, unfortunately, is about moving forward. What do you think of Stearns? What are they going to do with the trade deadline? What are they going to do with Pete Alonso? How do they move forward? Do they have a manager you believe in moving forward? And ultimately, I think a lot of those questions are all in the affirmative. Yes, yes, yes. 218, McMonagle here with you, 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019, a dominant Yankee team, a good win for the Mets, but told me a lot more about the manager than it did about the team. Let me hear what you got to think. We'll get to take your calls for the next 3 hours or so, 888-808-1019. We'll get into the Aaron Rodgers situation yet again, and have I changed my mind now that it's a vacation? Have I changed my mind now that he's missing more than just one day? Have I changed my mind? I'll let you know. And maybe, just maybe, a little weird, out-of-the-box thinking trade for the New York Yankees as we focus on how to try and fix first base and add a corner infielder in to this group that's already dominating the American League, and then plus another day for Tom Brady. Let's all stop what we're doing and celebrate Tom Brady one more freaking time, because we all need it. We need it in our lives. What would a week be without celebrating Tom Brady now that he's officially retired? I mean, he's got a roast. He's got his number retired in the middle of June. Like, what the hell is this? He's going to have a day in Gillette. Like, you know it. Why do we have to celebrate this guy once a week? But that's just my own personal bugaboo. We'll get to that later. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. Actually, let's get to a call right now. Howard in Southampton. What's up, Howard?
Hi, Chris. I was going to ask you about the first base situation with the Yankees, too, yeah. What your level of concern is, what kind of priority you're going to give it at the trading deadline, and really what you think of Rizzo in the near and even the long term.
Well, I mean, listen, it's clearly one of the needs of this team. There's no doubt about it. There is a need for a corner infielder on this team. Rizzo, until he proves me otherwise, now I know he's confident that he'll turn it around. He has looked a little bit better, to be fair. He got a hit in this game last night. Some of the at-bats have looked better. Defensively, another ball that he has to get in front of. I mean, he's still struggling defensively, but yeah, ultimately, my level of concern is about as much as I can have concern with a team playing like the 1998 New York Yankees. It's an issue.
What kind of priority are you going to give it as the trading deadline?
Yeah, I mean, as high as
220 and LeMahieu's at batting 200.
Yeah,
you got to do something on one of those positions.
Yes, as high a priority as I can give it, but it's not.
Are you willing to give up a prospect? That's what I mean.
I don't know. I don't know. It depends on for who, but no, probably not. Not a big time prospect. Not a Dominguez or a Spencer Jones type prospect. No, I mean
I
don't know.
Spencer Jones is going to be untouchable. But
well, that's what I'm saying, and so is Dominguez. Like but who are we talking about? Like, and
what
I mean, I'd rather come up and I'd rather come up and just like play, maybe give Ben Rice a try. And see if, because he's been killing it in AAA, and see what he could do. But it's minor moves. It's Rengifo out of the Anaheim right now playing for the Angels, who's hitting around 300, having a nice little season. It's going to be minor upgrades. You don't have to go out and get Pete Alonso. You don't have to go out and get a huge name here. Which, by the way, how many people have thrown out Pete Alonso to the Yankees in the last 2 days? I said it 3 weeks ago, but I mean, I don't think you have to go out and make a major move like that. I'm not looking for another all-star. I'm not looking for another dominant force. I'm not looking for someone who's going to hit fourth or fifth. I'm just looking for an upgrade over what we've had, which, as to your point, are two of the worst hitters in baseball right now. Now, LeMahieu's just getting started again. I'm not hung up on LeMahieu just yet. Rizzo's had a full calendar year of being this terrible player. So, I mean,
well, last year he was bad, too. I know
that's
about
what I'm saying. A full calendar year. I mean, I know the concussion play, but I mean, we're talking about a full 12 months, a full year of him being a terrible baseball player. So I'm much more concerned about Rizzo than I am LeMahieu. I give as much important a look as I do any other ad I want for the New York Yankees. You obviously want swing and miss in the bullpen, because as good as the bullpen has been, they're not striking people out. The closer doesn't strike people out as much as you'd like. Anything can happen when balls are put in play. Ultimately, you'd rather have some more swing and miss. I think you'd rather have you'd love to have a lefty swing and miss, but you're going to be looking for some relievers that actually strike people out. That's 100% going to happen. It might not be names we all know right now, but it might not be the closer, but it'll be someone who comes in and is a different than what they've had here. The Matt Blake special of bringing in sinker slider guys who, you know, get soft contact and don't give up runs and pitch well. But in a postseason series, you're afraid of that contact. That's been the fear of the Yankee fan of Clay Holmes, because even when Clay Holmes is pitching well, there's a chance he doesn't get a lot of swing and misses, and he'll get infield singles, and there can be an opportunity for an error. Because look back at all the blown saves or all the tough innings he's had over the last year or so. Like, all of it involves an error. And all of it involves an infield single. Like, little things like that, very rarely. It happens. He gave up the home run against Colorado last year. He was just awful against Miami in one game last year. But for the most part, if Holmes doesn't do the job, a lot of the time he wasn't that bad. He just gave up a little roller down the third baseline. Or he hit up a soft ground ball just past him that Gleyber threw away. Like, that's typically how those innings spiral out of control. It's very rarely he's just, oh, that one's laced into the gap. Oh, that one's, over Judge's head. Like, it's very rarely anything like that. It's just that's what you're afraid of with this bullpen moving forward. You want some more swing and miss. So those are the two. I think they're both on my same level of concern, and I attack it with as much vigor at both positions. But right now, for a team that's playing this well, for a team I trust this much, and for an organization moving forward that we know, if they are going to want to sign Juan Soto, is going to have to do things cheap in other positions, I don't know if I want to trade away guys that I plan on being a part of the team in the next year or two. Unless I'm going to go big game hunting, which I don't think the Yankees will do. I just don't. I just don't see it in my mind. And I'll give you one later today that would be big game hunting. That would be a massive trade inside the American League East. I just don't see it happening. But it would be fun. Something happened today that sparked my thought on it, and I'll give it to you later.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We know what we think. What do you think? Call the Fan, 888-808-1019. Powered by AT&T Business.
All right, 2:30. McMonagle here with you. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. You know, I want to talk about, I went to the Mets in the second half of that open, and I mentioned I wanted to talk about Stanton. I didn't get around to it. You know, I know I've defended Stanton a lot, and I've been down on him too. I mean, he was terrible last year, and even if you look at his numbers this year, I mean, he's not nearly the MVP he was, right? And I'm not even sure he's an all-star necessarily. He's got an OPS in the mid-sevens. I mean, he still gives you at-bats. Like, watching his at-bats last night, he's very predictable. Like, if you have a keen eye for watching Stanton or watching guess hitters, he's very predictable, and he is a guess hitter. And if you watch the game last night, I don't know why I'm going to go too deep into this, but I will. In his first at-bat, he got thrown breaking balls for the first two strikes. The pitcher, what's his name who started? Doesn't matter. He threw him sliders to get ahead, and then when he had him 0-2 or 1-2, whatever the count was, he blew a fastball by him, and Stanton looked at it right down the middle. Right? Took the pitch right down the middle on a fastball because he assumed another slider was coming. And then in the at-bat that he hits the home run, the exact same thing happened, and the pitcher made a mistake and threw him a fastball with two strikes because he figured that's how they're trying to attack him. Sliders, he keeps throwing me sliders. Once he gets two strikes, he's going to try and sneak a fastball by me. That's how they're attacking me because they know I'm looking slider. And he hits another bomb 450 feet into left center field. And then his third at bat, same thing. Slider, and then they caught up to him and threw him another slider, and he swung at it, assuming it would be a fastball because that's how they were attacking him, and he swung at a ball in the other batter's box. He is a pitchable guy. Here's the difference between Stanton and the other guys in the middle of the lineup. And as good as Stanton's been in the postseason, and I'll defend him, the thing about Stanton is he can be pitched to. There is no doubt. And as much as Judge has maybe struggled in the postseason, everyone's going to bring it up, 2-11, blah, blah, blah. If Judge is going well, you can't pitch to him. There's nothing you can do. Like, he's going to beat you. Right? He's going to be, not every time because baseball is a game of failure, but there's no formula to pitch to Aaron Judge. There's no formula to pitch to Soto. If you make your pitches against Stanton, you can beat him. If you make a mistake, he'll beat you. And that's what's scary about him in certain spots, but what is also, and watching the game, Boone talked about this, the threat inside the lineup. Because, yeah, as most hitters in baseball, if you execute your pitches, you can get them out. Stanton can absolutely be pitched to. But it's very difficult to consistently make your pitches. And to have to then get to a point where, good God, do I have to make my pitches against Soto and Judge? And even if I do, I could get clobbered. To have to come off of that and then face the imposing figure of the 6'7", 500-foot bomb-hitting home run smasher that is Giancarlo Stanton in the middle of that order is just another element of an impossible order to navigate. And so as much as we might scream and as much as we might laugh at his sliders in the dirt and swinging at it, if he is healthy, he is a huge part of this team and one of the main reasons why Jason Dominguez, everybody's love and everybody wants to see him, myself included, why Jason Dominguez just came off the injured reserve, or the, you know, his time on the 60-day IL and was optioned to AAA. Because there's no place for him right now to play every day because Verdugo's been too good and Giancarlo means too much. And we all like to knock him, and I get it. Overall, it makes the team less athletic. It holds up the DH spot. But he is an imposing force in the middle of this lineup, and he is vital to them being the best version of themselves, especially over the 162. And you can make the case, and I just kind of did, that come postseason time, he can be pitched to, but yet in his tenure in a New York Yankee uniform, he is by far their best postseason hitter. So if he gets hot, he can be devastatingly good. And over the course of a year, he's going to hit you 35 home runs and make it much more difficult for the starting pitcher of the opposition. And he'll end up getting mistakes, especially hitting after Soto and Judge, because you have to be so on top of your game against those two that it's just a natural letdown against the guys after it. It's just a natural letdown for the Singers of the world, for the Lynches of the world who pitched last night, for all these guys who might not be the Corbin Burns, who are great, the Glasnow, who the Yankees beat but is great, for the top-end echelon pitching. Good luck making it through that lineup. And then if you do get through Soto and Judge miraculously, there is a 6'7" monster waiting for you. He is a huge part of this team. Huge. And him being healthy is a key determining factor on what they'll be. Because, I like Jason Dominguez. I do. He was great at the end of the last year, and he's killing it in AAA and AA, wherever he was in both spots over the course of his rehab assignment. But unless he's going to come back and be the same player he was just in AAA, or be the same player he was for the brief, you know, week or 2 weeks they had him at the end of last year, if he just reverts back to being pretty damn good for a young player, it's not the imposing threat, despite him being switch hitter. Stanton is such an important piece to this team. And if you saw the stats, obviously the three of them have hit more home runs than teams. The three of them have hit more home runs than five teams, one of them being the fraud Toronto Blue Jays. But Judge does not get enough credit, and Judge is not getting enough credit for this potent offense right now. This offense that leads the American League run scored, Judge is not going to get the credit, and I understand why. Volpe's having an incredible year. Soto and Judge, you know, Judge is on another planet, and Soto is a Hall of Famer, so I get it. But there's no doubt Verdugo has brought the element of left-handed hitting and the defense in left field. So while Giancarlo hits these bombs, the fan base still, for the most part, is, you know, isn't as high on him as I am, and they should be. Because Boone talked about it. He is a major part to this team. And I understand he's not an MVP, and I understand his OPS is whatever it is because he swings and misses too much. And he'll go through times where he will go what he did in the Dodgers series. where he can be pitched to against the better echelon pitching, and he will go 1-for-16 with 13 strikeouts or something ridiculous. He is not above that. He is not too good for that. That is still a part of his game. Swing and miss is still a major part of his game. These stretches where he looks awful is still a part of his game, but he is a absolute imposing figure that makes life so much more complicated and difficult for the other team's pitching. And plus, he hits massive home runs. And they're, you know, when he's healthy, he's going to hit you 35 to 40 home runs. He has been great this year. I think changing his body type has dramatically helped him. And as long as he stays healthy, he's in the middle of that lineup, and he is scaring the bejesus out of everyone. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, what's going on, Dunn? How you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm all right. Yo, I got something I want to talk to you about with Lewis Hill. Teaser for tomorrow. I'm going to call you if God spare life, and I'm going to say something to you about Judge. We'll talk about that tomorrow. But it's a conversation I think I had with you, and I also had with Sal last year, and also the year before. But we'll talk about that tomorrow. Two things really quickly, though, before I get to my Lewis Hill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you said something about Dominguez.
Yes.
And, you know, the tone of the conversation that I'm hearing, and I even am a victim of that. It's like, you know, almost like I feel bad for him because the kid should be here. But, you know, the more that I think about it, the kid is in a prime spot right now. And if he's smart, he deals with it the right way, everything is only going to be positive for him. Because on the one hand, he is a, you know, like one of those, you know, break glass in case of emergency kind of things. If something goes up, somebody is breaking that glass and there's going to be an action that happens with him. And at the same time, especially coming off of Tommy John surgery and all that stuff like that, he has a prime opportunity to really, like, just prime himself and just do everything that he can to get as... Because either way, one way or another, he is definitely bona fide part of the future. So for him, like, there's not even a feel bad for him. This is something that actually, yeah, I think, helps his development. And the next thing I wanted to say,
okay,
you mentioned something... I'm sorry. You mentioned something about what we were talking about last night, and I wanted to say thank you because you actually broadened my scope on that and made me feel a little bit better than that, better about a concern that I had, because it doesn't have to be a 40-homer, 100-RBI guy that I'm talking about for, like, first base and all those concerns that I brought up with you as far as the trade issues. Mm-hmm. I like the way that you framed that and the way that, you know, it's somebody that, you know, because essentially what you're telling me is that I'm looking for somebody like Rizzo, but Rizzo when I actually traded for him. You know, that kind of guy that was lost in something for a minute or wasn't sure he's played into the future of somebody else's team, but can actually do something on the margins to help me and improve the situation that I have. To get to the Lewis Hill, which is my real point that I call for tonight, yeah, and this is, again, me being a victim of my own arrogance. But in the past, I've been somebody who, like, you know, there were times, you know, even Stu from Brooklyn, and shout out to Stu. Like, in the past, there have been times when Boone was quick to pull somebody out of the game and the guy is cooking and you're like, yo, let the guy cook. I'm telling you right now, unless Lewis Hill, and I was listening to some comments from some interviews with the pitching coach.
Yeah.
Unless Lewis Hill gets, like, a chance where he's actually about to pitch, like, there's a thought that he might pitch a perfect game, we're going to start seeing some real short, not like the minute he, you know, if it's a situation like tonight where they put a bunch of runs on the board,
yep,
he hits that minimum in the sixth inning and you can pull him out and like, because that's how they're going to try to conserve those innings. The stress innings, like from 7 to 9, if there's a minute that they can get him out early and still ensure him to win and, you know, like,
well, he have lead, I don't think they care about the win.
Yeah, and even that, but at the same time, it's going to be a lot of, not necessarily short hooks, but if things are moving nice and he does his minimum amount of work, and as a Yankee fan, I'm going to have to sit back there like it might be a night when he's really cooking and he bring him out and I'm like, oh, what are you doing? But at the same time, if I'm looking forward to trying to hold on to him in the future as far as the postseason,
yeah,
I'm willing to take that. So Boone is going to start playing that game with the book the way he used to with some of the other guys. And if you notice, he hasn't been doing that so much with Rodon and Stroman. He lets them go, you know, but with Hill, for what they're trying to do, because you could tell right now from the way the pitching coach sounded, they don't have, like, as much as they're very cautious about it and they are watching it and it is a subject, they're trying to feel their way out and look at different strategies as far as how they actually go about it. I think that's going to be one of the first ones that they hit on. As much as you can minimize his innings in the starts that he has, especially if he's giving you a win, let's do that and save whatever we can. You know what I'm saying? Especially if they have like a plan starting the game as far as the relievers coming off. If Boone already has like a, you know, lanes that he's seeing for other guys, it's going to be those kind of starts. Thanks a lot for the time.
You got it, Val. Yeah, no, I understand that. And I listen, I agree. I heard, I saw the Matt Blake stuff on Luis Gil. I don't want to put him in the bullpen at all, ever. I disagree with that. I don't want to ramp him down and then have to ramp him back up. That screams to me injury. I don't know why. I don't know. Listen, and first of all, let me just tell you something right now about Matt Blake. I mean, Matt Blake could come to my house and, you know, tell me things about my marriage and I'll just take his advice. He could tell me that I should make my kids Giant fans and I wouldn't hang up on him. Matt Blake can do whatever he wants. I mean, the guy has been incredible. He has shaped this entire organization since he's been here. Hell, just the pitching alone, I mean, has shaped the organization. It's incredible what they've been able to do and how good he is at his job. And I hope he never leaves. But at the same time, I hate the idea of putting Luis Gil in the bullpen. I hate it. I hate the idea of ramping him down and then ramping him back up, because if he's just going to go into the bullpen, then I certainly hate it. I understand everybody's pitching well. I understand you would have faith in Rodon. You would have faith in Nestor Cortez, obviously Gerrit Cole. And then, you know, if Clark Schmidt ever does come back and pitches in the back end, you could see him as the fourth starter. I mean, I wouldn't, as much as he's been their worst starter, I still think Nestor Cortez will go later today. I still trust Nestor in some fashion. I mean, I think he's still a pretty damn good starter. I just think Luis Gil's special. So the idea of taking him out of the rotation come playoff time is just asinine to me. So if the point is bullpen for a while, I don't know how you do that. Then he's strictly the long man and he's still keeping his innings up and he's throwing 80 some odd pitches every so often just to make sure he's got that in him. I think there's better ways. I'd rather just skip him starts and do what Val was just talking about and limit innings during starts. Like, he's right. Perfect example. They score 6 runs in the first inning. There's 8 runs scored in the fifth. He's out after 5, no matter how he's pitching. He could have 65 pitches and 1 hit. You're out. We got to limit you. I'm cool with that. I'm not putting him in the bullpen because a late season ramp up sounds scary to me. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to try and ramp up his pitch count again at the end of the season. I want to skip starts from Luis Gil. I want to limit his innings in the starts he pitches. I completely agree with Val. And you're going to see it. It's going to bother you, but it is what it is because every win's a must win. But the Yankees can't look at it that way. Because with Luis Gil, let's be fair, for me, there's one win. There's one win that matters. And it's not against the Red Sox that he'll make a start against this week. It's not against Baltimore. It's not against anybody else. There is one win that I want from Luis Gil, and that's in the postseason. That's it. This team is going to the playoffs. There's no doubt about it. With Luis Gil, without Luis Gil, they're going to the playoffs. And I need him to be this version of himself, this dominant figure who doesn't give up hits, let alone runs. I need him making a start in the postseason. That's what I need. I don't need him beating Seattle. I don't need him beating Minnesota. I don't need him beating Boston. I don't need him beating Texas. I don't need him beating anybody else unless it's in October. So they have to figure out a way to get him there. And I understand the bullpen allure of still having him while you limit his innings, but I can't do it. I can't do it. Rich in Manhattan. What's up, Rich?
Hey, Chris. I just wanted to go over something that I was listening last night.
You
were discussing the St. Louis Cardinal fans.
I certainly was.
They gave a big ovation to that phenom on the Pirates, the pitcher, right?
Yes.
Was that it?
Correct. Okay.
And you were saying that you can't imagine, like, Yankee fans doing that to an in-rival opponent who had a great game against them. right?
Yes. Well, in that situation, yes. Now, someone before you get to it, someone, a couple, multiple people have called me about Tom Seaver's 300th win. Well, in
I was at that game.
Yes.
And that game was in early August. The Yankees were 9.5 out at that time. Eventually, they did lose the division, but only by 2 games to the Blue Jays.
Mm-hmm.
So the game was important, and it was a day that they honored Phil Rizzuto. They actually brought out a cow, and they named it Holy Cow.
Right.
Now, another situation where I was at a really great game was rookie Fernando Valenzuela.
Yes.
When he came to New York for the first time when he was like 7-0, and he outpitched Mike Scott like 2-1. It was a great game. He got a great ovation from the Met fan.
Did he walk off the mound mid-game, or was it at the end of the game?
No, he didn't go the complete game.
Okay.
But the bottom line is that even if a guy on a hated team has a great game against you, that you're going to remember a long time, you got to give him the prop.
No, you don't. That's absolutely ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. I can't speak to the Fernando Valenzuela. I know people got caught up in Fernando mania.
No, but just in general.
Absolutely not.
The guy
if I was at Yankee Stadium when Pedro Martinez threw 8 shutout innings against the Yankees, as he's walking off the mound, I got to stand and applaud him?
If it's a one-hitter, you got to appreciate the effort.
Absolutely not. That's absolute crap. I completely disagree.
Well, then 100%. You're just a fanboy. But let me ask you.
What do you mean just a fanboy? I can respect it. I can acknowledge how good it is. I can say, damn, that freaking Pedro is unbelievable. I'm not going to cheer him on.
Okay. No, you're not cheering him on.
Yes, you are.
When he's done, you're appreciating the game.
No.
But let me ask you a historical question about the Yankees.
Yes.
Because sometimes, you know, someone bring up and you'll say, well, it's before my time.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Sure.
Okay. Now, we know that who was the first president of the United States?
The first president of the United States?
Yeah.
Listen, I appreciate the idea that we're going to have this
before your time.
Yeah, I understand.
So tell me why. I think you got to know about your own team's history.
I talk about their history all the time. I know tons about their history. There's an occasional spot where I'll go, all right, that's before my time. I can't speak to it eloquently behind it. But I know when you talk. Don't patronize me with who's the first president of the United States.
No.
When was the Articles of Confederation? Never mind. Good.
Let me ask you a simple question.
Yeah.
You know Tony Lazare?
Yeah, I've heard of him.
Why was he called? Why was this thing push him up, Tony?
I have no idea, nor do I care. What's your point?
The point is you really should know your history.
Shush. Like, honestly, what the hell are you talking about? What does that have to do with it? I need to know where Tony Lazare's nickname came from. No, I don't. Be ridiculous. Should really know the history. Shut up. Who's the first president of the United States? That was the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Ridiculous. I'm sorry. That has not. Occasionally I'll say it's before my time because someone will like ask me a stupid question like that and go, what was Tony Lazare's nickname? And I go, I don't know. It's before my time. I don't know his nickname. Doesn't mean I don't know everybody's nickname. I can give you a bunch of Babe Ruth nicknames. You know why? Because I watched The Sandlot. You dope. That was one of the more arrogant, senseless calls I've taken in the year that I've been doing this. What does that have to do with anything? If Tom Seaver had a crowning career achievement at the end of a game, if you want to applaud 300 wins, which cements a lifetime of hard work and puts him into the Hall of Fame, okay, I'm open to that. I'm open to the idea of maybe applauding that. If you think I should sit there as a fan who just is watching my team get put into last place by a starting pitcher who had a dominant 6 1/3 inning performance, and as he walks off the field, I have to stand and applaud him and tip my cap, otherwise I'm a fanboy, then you, sir, are an idiot. I don't applaud people who beat me while they're beating me. As I'm walking out to my car, can I say, God, that guy was freaking unbelievable tonight. Can you believe how good he is? Can you believe how good this guy is? Freaking Pittsburgh. How'd they get their hands on this guy? That makes sense. That's plausible. I respect the game. Pedro Martinez is a Hall of Famer. Pedro Martinez is one of the greatest pitchers to ever live. If anybody asked me what I thought about Pedro Martinez, I'd be like, what an unbelievable competitor. The guy was great. I'm not going to applaud him as he walks off the mound after he sent Jeter and Soriano to the hospital. Like, what are we talking about? And what does that have to do with Tony Lazzari? Like, stop. It has absolutely nothing to do with it. Push him up, Joe. I don't care. I have no interest in why he got that nickname. None. I don't care. And nor does it have anything to do with what we're discussing. Has absolutely nothing to do with it. Who's the first president of the United States? That really got me. That condescending nature.
Because you can tell exactly what he meant by it, yes. But it's such a stupid argument.
It's such a stupid argument.
Like, you know
argument.
What? He doesn't know the history of every single senator from the state of New York or wherever he lives.
Yeah.
Sit out the next election.
Yeah, that's it. You have no interest. You have no right.
You don't know everything that happened in Yankees history.
Yeah.
So you can't possibly speak on them now.
No.
And I'm sure he knows everything.
Fans.
When was he born? Maybe 50s, 40s? Yeah, he knows everything about the 1920s
and
Yankees.
And the discussion isn't even about necessarily the Yankees. I guess I should know everything about every fan. I should just know the beginning of fandom as it's. I should be there for the first caveman who applauded the first picture on a cave. If I wasn't there for that, then I can't speak to people applauding.
I mean, it's not like he said the great Bambino and you went, who?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous. It's totally ridiculous.
I think it just enhances your argument from yesterday, too, that the best anybody can come up with is the Seaver argument.
Yeah.
You talked about a team in the middle of whatever we want to call it, a race. They're kind of in a wild card race.
Yeah.
A division rival is beating them. It passes them in the standings.
Right.
The guy is owning them. Tom Seaver was a guy who pitched in New York at a time where, you know, there was no Yankees and Mets ever facing each other.
Right.
People followed both teams. Right. They rooted for him. They rooted for a guy who spent most of his career here, like you said, this lifetime crowning achievement at the very end of the game when it was over.
Yeah, and as another caller mentioned, there was probably a lot of Met fans in the building applauding their hero.
Right, they probably went to Yankee Stadium to see their
Tom
childhood
Seaver.
Hero, their franchise, win his 300th game.
No doubt. A lot of that building might have been Met fans. There's a difference between respecting the game. This is what that caller doesn't understand. There's a difference between respecting greatness, and then there's another about being happy that it happened to you.
I mean, Paul Skenes is in, what, his fifth career start, and that, he's mowing you down?
Like, that's it. There was nothing special about that, necessarily, other than just another nice, very good start. It was a solid start. It was six innings and a third. He didn't throw a perfect game. I mean, it wasn't Steve Nebraska out there throwing 81 pitches and 81 strikes. It was, I mean, he came off the mound, and I'm supposed to tip my cap to a guy who just kicked my ass? Like, I'm sorry. No, thank you. And somehow, you know, Tony Lazzari's nickname is very relevant to this conversation.
Even then, tipping your cap is a far cry from standing up out of your seat and clapping for the guy as he comes off the mound.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Who's the first president? I don't know if I've ever been that angry at a phone call before. And I had someone try to tell me how to parent yesterday.
Right. We had one of the caller who always tries to push your buttons, tell you how to parent less than 24 hours ago.
And that bothered me less than the condescending question of who was the first president. Oh, my God. I know. Everybody knows it's James Madison. 257, McMonagle here with you. 888-808-1019. But that was before the Articles of Confederation. So who really cares? That's back when the Capitol was in Seattle. Does that even matter?